You're listening to Upside Down Podcast,
an ecumenical conversation
at the intersection of justice, spirituality, and culture.
We've created this space with you in mind.
So join us for unscripted conversations on God's Upside Down Kingdom.
Hey friends, Lindsay here. I'm jumping back on to encourage you to support Abide's Women Health Services. We here at Upside Down Podcast would like to match any financial gift you make this week during Black Maternal Health Week with our Patreon funds. So y'all know our patrons are what keep the podcast lights on, and we are sort of the little podcast that could. We're not rolling in dough, but we believe in giving our mites when we've got them. And so this week, any gift you make, we will match up to $233. Just send us a DM or an email of your giving receipt, and we will match it. So go to abidewomen.org to make your donation there. Send us a receipt, and we'll match your gift. Thanks so much for your generosity and your support of the work that Cecily is doing.
This is Upside Down Podcast. I'm your host today, Alisa Molina, and I'm here with co-host Lindsay Wallace.
Hey, guys.
Show notes for today's episode can be found on Instagram at Upside Down Podcast. This show is currently 100% listener funded. If you'd like to throw a couple of bucks our way to help keep this podcast free and also free of ads, please visit patreon.com/upsidedownpodcast, or you can visit upsidedownpodcast.com. Click give in the upper right-hand corner and just follow along to help us out. Our guest today is Cecily Smith. We are so excited to have Cecily today. She is a racial and maternal justice activist who's committed to tearing down walls of oppression and division in order to build bridges that lead to solution-based practices. Her journey began with her struggle with infertility and lack of awareness of her own body, and then the eventual healthy, safe, and beautiful births of her own children. Over the years, she has witnessed the devastating impact systemic failures in healthcare, housing, and economics have had on the human condition. Having the ability to see the overlap in these structures has given her the drive to pursue justice in an unconventional way that brings unlikely people together. I love that part because that is just so us. Cecily's passion for Black women and for her community is what compelled her to co-found Abide Women's Health Services, an organization that exists to improve birth outcomes in communities with the lowest quality of care. Executive director, anti-racist, and maternal justice advocate, speaker, and educator are just a few of the many hats she wears. So, Cecily, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here with you both.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking this time in the midst of this just crazy collective upheaval to be with us. I personally have been so excited to have you on because I've been learning from you for what seems like years and years. I've been a little bit of a fangirl from afar. And so there's so much that we want to unpack today. I do know that it'd be a little just weird not to kind of at least begin the conversation with these hard times in mind. So I thought just at the beginning here, Lindsay and Cecily, that we would just do how are you guys? How are we right now?
Oh boy, how are we? Things are rough. I think these are rough for a lot of people. I mean, I normally would say, respond to that by saying, I'm okay. But am I really? Not. I'm okay. Sort of. There we go. Sort of.
Right. Yeah.
That's good. I read a statistic today or yesterday that 3/4 of the United States is basically on lockdown right now. So just so our listeners know, like, we're all kind of in this same boat. But I think for, like, to answer that how are you doing question, there are 5 words that I think communicate really well how I'm doing. I cut my own hair. So I think that communicates, that tells you all that you need to know about how I'm doing.
Oh boy.
That's the level of quarantine that we're in right now.
Yeah. And I have begun homeschooling five kids, three elementary, one middle, and one high school kid. And with about, I don't know, 15 teachers involved in all of that. So I am, I think I'm just like kind of treading. I'm treading water, like bare, like, okay, I'm here. I told a friend of mine today, I said, you know, I'm starting to hit kind of a stride here where I kind of know what I'm doing. And I think, you know, 2 weeks from now, I'll probably be like, okay, the newness has worn off of this new schedule. And I'll probably be like ready to like move or I don't cut my hair. Yeah, maybe cut my hair.
Or okay, if you're in a flexible like state when it comes to homeschooling, unenroll. I've had mothers that are so overwhelmed with trying to do school at home. They're just like, you know what? I'm just going to unenroll.
Wow. I haven't even heard of that. Oh, I bet you that starts happening in the next couple of weeks. Okay, so Lindsay texted me something really awesome today. She said that this episode, when it goes live, it'll be during Black Maternal Health Week. And I shot back like, that is the Holy Spirit telling us, yep, I'm still here. I'm actually maybe really, really getting y'all's attention here, you know, as you're slowing down. So I just want you to be prepared for all the questions. Because they're coming.
I'm bracing myself.
Okay. Okay, Lindsay, why don't you start us off? Because again, we didn't want to start this conversation without kind of giving a nod to this new space that we're all in.
Yeah. So I've been observing people online and in real life too. I always say that online and in real life, but just there's a particular segment of the population who the coronavirus epidemic is revealing all of these cracks or gaping holes, honestly, in our society and our social structures and our systems. And we're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know people didn't make a living wage and they can't afford to buy their kids lunch. Or, oh my gosh, I didn't know a huge percentage of our population doesn't get sick leave. I didn't know that. So these things are being revealed. And there's people who have been living in those systems and structures who are like, we've been complaining and asking for help for a long time. So I'm wondering, there was a recent Atlantic article that was entitled "The Coronavirus Called America's Bluff." And in it, Anne Applebaum said, "Epidemics have a way of revealing underlying truths about the societies they impact." So the question is, what are the underlying truths that are being revealed in light of COVID-19, would you say?
Well, that America isn't great and never has been for everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the truth. I would dare to say that the hardest working people in America today are the working class, the service industry, those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet. These are people that we depend on every single day. Mm-hmm. Right. And these are the people that are impacted the most by COVID-19. And so, everything that you just said, Lindsay, as far as the population that I work in, even my own family, I mean, these are things that we've been talking about forever, you know. Going without a paycheck, just one, can literally send someone to the streets. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people around that they can't diaper their babies. They're wondering how in the world, where in the world they're going to birth their baby. There's just so much. Y'all chime in. I'm trying to process it.
So I wonder, do you think, so this is a question for both of you. Do you think, I'm trying to be positive here, but I wonder if, you know, if and when we kind of can peek our heads out of this again and go back to our jobs and our schools, do you think that people are out there right now really reflecting on these gaping holes holes right now, or is right now just, I'm going to be very honest. I mean, I follow on the internet a lot of truth tellers and a lot of people that I hold in very high esteem. And right now, I think because I'm just trying to manage life, I've kind of stepped back from all of the information that I was consuming in trying to dismantle these systems. And I just wonder if when we, you know, peek out of this, will there be a sense of, oh, we didn't know, we got to get to work, or I was under my blankets with my head in the sand, and thank goodness now I can go back to my dinners at the Domain. The Domain in Austin is just where, you know, all the, there's, you know, all the people hang out, and there's Nordstrom's, and there's, you know, I'm wondering what you guys think about that.
I don't know the answer. I mean, I hope that this changes us. I hope that we don't go back to business as usual. And I hope that we, the word that comes to mind for me in thinking through this question is value. And I think like our idols are showing in terms of who we value and what we value. And even thinking about healthcare and the fact that in order to have healthcare in our country, you have to work a certain kind of job and you have to work a certain number of hours. So clearly people with, you know, chronic illness or mothers or, you know, anybody who doesn't work a certain type of job or a number of hours, like, well, you don't get healthcare. Like, what does that say about the value that we behold to people? So I don't know. I don't know what will happen, but I am hopeful that it does change us and that we do begin to value people because they have inherent value and not because of their worth or what they contribute to our economy or
their productivity.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Productivity. Yeah.
Right. So
I think that,
yeah, go ahead.
That, a lot of the circles that I frequent and people that I follow, this, none of this is new. You know, I think that exactly. We've been shouting this over and over again. So this is just a more vivid portrayal of what we've already been saying, you know? And so I can only hope that people's eyes are opening. That they're coming from underneath the blanket and that they put words to action. I came across this Instagram post that stated some pretty interesting truths, and I'd like to read a little bit of that, if it's okay. So it says, I'm just going to read the entire thing. COVID-19 is showing you the facts that American capitalism has lied about. It's showing how many of you support socialism when it's convenient for you or the people you care for. Children could have gotten laptops and free Wi-Fi this whole time. Wi-Fi could have been a utility this whole time. College students could have frozen interest rates on student loans this whole time. Pregnant women, disabled people, and single parents could have worked from home this whole time. Abandoned federal buildings could have been used for homeless people. Evictions for hard times could have been delayed this whole time. Co-pays and other out-of-pocket health provider fees could have been waived. Not turning someone's electricity or water off in desperate times so they can survive could have happened this whole time. Sick people could have been encouraged to take off and given paid time off to care for themselves. The bottom line is humanity could have been humane this whole time. And so I'm just really hoping that, you know, I didn't fact check all of this, but, you know, I'm sure that a lot of these things are happening now that weren't happening before. A lot of people go to work and they're sick because they can't afford to take time off, you know, or they don't have time off, you know, but they're screamed at because they're sick at work. And so it's just one of those things where when are we going to become compassionate? When are we going to be humane? You know, and so I'm hoping that through this pandemic that, you know, business executives, you know, start rethinking how much they pay their employees. We start rethinking what minimum wage is. We start rethinking What are we going to do about healthcare and sick leave? And, you know, what about children that are sick and moms have to, you know, or mothers or fathers have to leave work because they have a sick child? That we start actually thinking about these policies that we implement in our own businesses, mm-hmm. and that we step away from this rushed and busy lifestyle that ends up really just depleting us.
Yeah,
that's, I'm going to need that, that post. That was that last part really, that last part really, really stuck out. I was wondering in all of this, as we're talking about this healthcare and about who it's affecting and how it's affecting, if you would tell us just a little bit about your background and what it is that you are striving to do and why you think it's important there in South Dallas.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background. So my background in healthcare is I was a doula and childbirth educator, and so now I am co-founder and executive director of an organization called Abide Women's Health Services. And so we exist to improve birth outcomes in communities with the lowest quality of care. And so, and by that meaning lack of access to care, lack of equity, we face, you know, low birth weight babies, preterm birth, high infant maternal mortality rate. So, you know, that's a buy. Me personally, I am an activist. I consider myself an activist, a maternal justice activist and racial justice activist, and really trying to educate and empower others to stand up and stand for justice. Just stand for justice, period. And so I forgot where I was going.
So can you tell me, this is all wonderful. Can you tell me what led you to that? Maybe like this specific area of justice? Because you and I and Lindsay, we all know there are lots of areas of injustice that we're trying to tackle and that we're trying to dismantle. And what was it about this specifically that what led you here, I guess, besides God?
Yeah, besides God. Yeah, absolutely. So I initially started off I was involved in pro-life activism. And it was after the birth of my daughter. She's going to be 7 this year. But after the birth of my daughter, I went to a conference here in Fort Worth and listened to a midwife. Her name is Jenny Joseph. And that's when I learned about the infant maternal mortality rate amongst Black women and Black babies. And at that point, like it literally in that conference, I'm holding my 2-week-old at the time. Don't judge me for being at a conference with a 2-week-old.
Oh, girl.
don't judge me. but in that moment, when I was hearing about this, it shook me to my core. And it started, that's what changed how I pro-life. It changed how I did everything. It changed the entire reason why I became a doula. And it's from that point on where I knew that I had to do something. And now it took some time, of course, but it started off with my activism and pro-life work. And then it morphed into an organization and maternal and racial justice. I was brought up in I went to private school my entire life. I was very comfortable in white spaces. Oh, I am a Black woman, by the way. I am very comfortable in white spaces. But the thing about it is I was very assimilated into white culture. And so in my adult life, in the past 5 to 6 years, I've broken free from a lot of things. And I've become much more aware of just the injustices here in this country. And it just sparked a fire in me. And I honestly, it's God. It's God that's done that. It's I see with a completely different lens. I read the Bible in a different lens. I read the Bible from the perspective of the oppressed. You know, I see the oppressed. I see those who are marginalized. I see Jesus differently. I see him clearly, actually, not with rose-colored lenses. You know, I have learned to lament. I would say the biggest takeaway from the work that I do is that I see Jesus as someone who fights for those who are harmed, who are oppressed, who are victimized, who are the least. He fights for the least of these, and so it's Christ. It's Christ that's brought me to this place. Yeah, in a nutshell. I mean, I could talk on and on and on about it.
Oh, yeah, no, that was that was so good. When you said I have learned to lament, I mean, yes.
I mean, how often do we, you know, in our faith get so wrapped up in praise and worship? It's about praise and worship, praise and worship, praise and worship, so much that we don't lament. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't take the time to grieve. We don't take the time to take our complaint to the Lord, knowing that it's valid. Like, we can. Right. And know that we have permission to complain.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know?
It's interesting because this last Sunday, we were in the living room and we were live streaming mass, and it was the story of Lazarus. And, you know, the priest made it a point to really, really talk about Jesus weeping, that sentence, you know, where Jesus mm-hmm. wept. And, mm-hmm. You know, made the point of if the Lord wanted to get there before Lazarus died and prevent it, then he would have. And so it behooves us to sit with the fact that Jesus not only allows for lament, but he himself lamented, yeah. you know, yeah. And allow us to identify with that and to move in that and mm-hmm. to then move towards healing when you're allowed to first say what's wrong and how it hurts.
Right.
Talk to us a little bit about the narrative about surrounding Black childbirth, Black motherhood, and versus what the reality is. You know, what do Americans think they know but don't really know about this? Because to be honest, it was you that really started to shed a light for me on what's happening that I had no idea about.
About like Black maternal health.
Yes, all of that.
Mortality, yes. And yes. All of that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Right.
I mean, before I got involved in birth work, I didn't have any idea about this. When I was at that conference with a 2-week-old, I didn't know about infant maternal mortality amongst women that look like me. Mm-hmm. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. But the thing about it is, I think people walk around thinking that racism isn't real, and that birth outcomes are the same across the board, you know, that it right. It couldn't possibly be a doctor's fault. It's not racism. It's a medical error, you know, or it's mm-hmm. the mother's fault, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's mind blowing to a lot of people to think that systemic racism is a thing, and that Black women, you know, it was Black women are dying at 3 to 4 times times the rate of white women in childbirth due to childbirth related causes. But now it's 5 times, according to the CDC.
Oh, jeez.
It's rising. Like, over the past 20 years, it's nothing but risen. And so, or, you know, Black motherhood. It's, what's the difference? Like, motherhood is just hard for everybody, you know? But the reality is that it is different. Like, systemic racism is a thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And biases exist, whether implicit or explicit, you know? And so to your listeners, you know, unconscious bias, you don't know that you're biased. You don't. I mean, it can be anyone of any race, any color. You can be biased against a certain person. But there are studies. Let's just Google it. We're kind of beyond, just keeping it real, we're kind of beyond, like, over the past 4 years, there's been so much education on this that you literally have to be under a rock right. to have not heard of it. And so I encourage people to look it up. I want to kind of talk about something real quick, because I think this is a closely related, this kind of goes back to COVID-19 mm-hmm. and just kind of what's happening and how it affects Black women. And it ties in, but I'm going to paint a picture for everyone. So everyone that's fighting racial justice or has some kind of awareness of racial justice understands about weathering and what that is. But for those that are unfamiliar with the term, I'd like to share something to help put things in perspective. So I looked up what biological weathering is, and it is the weakened and subsequent disintegration of rock by plants, animals, and microbes. Okay. As a plant roots grow deeper to find sources of water, they push through cracks in rocks. As the roots grow, the cracks become larger, resulting in breaking the rocks into smaller pieces. So just think about how often we see cement poured into a flat, smooth surface. And years later, we begin to see cracks. You're like, how the world is that happening? And you see, like, you know, little sprigs of grass or weed growing in between the cracks. You're like, what? Well, growing plant roots can exert that much stress or pressure on rock. Microbial activity breaks down rock minerals by altering the rock's chemical composition, thus making it more susceptible to weathering. Now, we all know how hard and tough rocks are, right? Right?
Yep. Yep. Of course.
Like, yep. Even their bodies, quote unquote, bodies can be worn down. Even a rock's body can be worn down. So now imagine years and years of stress and racism, of all kinds, from medical, environmental, like what I said before, implicit and explicit biases.
Imagine all of that. Yeah.
Educational, mm-hmm. All of that. Like, imagine all that weighing in you for years and even generations. That's weathering. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I think about the narrative being told about Black childbirth, like, people aren't thinking about that. They're not thinking about the weathering. They're not thinking about people's individual, like, life experiences and how that impacts. They're not thinking about the history of this country and how the history influences every single system that's in place. Mm-hmm. And when it really boils down to it, Black women are at risk. Black children are at risk of death, like, period, you know? And so the more we unpack, like, our own biases or our own ignorance to these things, the better off, you know, I say it because it sounds so, like, peace, love, and happiness, but, like, the better our world will be, you know?
Yeah. No, for yeah. sure. I think as I've learned, one of the things that I wasn't prepared for was, as a brown woman, right? Mm-hmm. How much mm-hmm. bias exist in me. It makes me really, it makes me really angry that I have these biases. And so I've had to meet those realities of my own biases about, you know, whatever it is, black mothers, black fathers, whatever it is, a black kid in a hoodie, whatever it is, I've had to meet it with some massive humility. And I think that that's the number one thing that people, once they start to open up the faucet and take a little sip of what the reality is in our nation, they are quick to turn off the faucet, because once you turn on that faucet, it is a fire hose. And you're like, oh, wait a second. And honestly, there has been so much lament for me. First, in the knowledge that it has existed, it is what we're founded on, and then to then move on to the lament of nobody believes it. We believe that we've moved on, and that we are whining and complaining instead of pointing out truth.
Right, and it's sad. Like it honestly, it can be traumatizing to unpack all of that. To drink from the fire hose.
And that's that I'm not living the fire hose, right? That's that I'm just drinking it.
Right.
And you want to become an ally, but you want to become an authentic one. You want to do no harm, and you don't want to add to the harm. And so it's complicated, and it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of thinking.
It does, but I also think it's, you know, in order for us to push through and to grow, you can't be afraid to mess up. And that's one of the things that I've heard from, you know, any ally, mostly white allies, is just this fear of not of saying the wrong thing or whatever. The thing of the reality is that you're going to say the wrong thing.
Right.
You're gonna say the wrong thing. You're going to offend someone. Yes,
right.
It's a guarantee. Mm-hmm. But
where
you have to be like have the just take it. Like when someone passionately corrects you, swallow that and just fix it.
Right.
You know.
Right. Because at the end, it's not about you. I mean,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
Then you're
centering yourself. You're like, oh my gosh, my feelings are hurt. How could she, you know, like, no, just, all right, just fix it. And then when you know better, you do better. And it's true. It really, really is true. I've learned through the process of being on this podcast and listening to this podcast, I've learned words that I never knew were words you shouldn't. I mean, there's just been so much. Where do you find hope in what you do?
Oh goodness.
I mean, you get to hold babies. So I mean, that's,
you said what? Right?
You get to hold babies, right? You get to see babies, brand new babies coming into this world, right? In your work at Abide?
I'm more on the executive end. So like I get to support the birth workers. I support midwives and doulas and childbirth educators. The hope is Brian Stevenson. I hope I don't butcher this quote, but hopelessness is the enemy of justice. I believe I think that's a quote that he said. Hopelessness is the,
if not, it's your quote.
Enemy
of
justice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so I cannot be hopeless. I can't. I have to have hope. When I look at my children, I see hope. You know, when I see another person get it, like a light bulb goes off and gets it, there's hope. You know, when someone reaches out and apologizes or is like, they're taking the initiative to, right or wrong, there's hope. When I see black women winning, there's hope. You know, when I see Black women saying, okay, I'm not going to squeeze, you know, in between these two seats and, you know, make myself known at this table, but they start building their own tables and building their own seats, there's hope. You know, that's where I see hope. When I see grand midwives leaving a legacy of other Black and Indigenous midwives, I see hope. So yeah, it's not, I say, because it's really, you know, you really have to fight to not drown in hopelessness. You have to really open your eyes really wide and look for the hope, because we live in a fallen world. We live in a sinful world. We live in a world where people are very hedonistic, very self, just very much about themselves. And it's hard. I mean, even where I live in South Dallas, I live in the hood. And I often tell people that it's hard for me to live here at times because, you know, I see more of what man made, which is a lot of hot mess. Over what God made, what God created. That's why anytime I go out into the country or I go somewhere I'm just surrounded by nature, I feel as closer to God than ever, you know? There's a tremendous amount of peace in those type of spaces. But when you're surrounded by the corruption of man, it can tempt you to drown in hopelessness. You know, in my area here in South Dallas, when I walk out the door, you never know what you're going to see. You can go several nights hearing gunfire. Just in the past couple of nights, I've heard lots of what I thought were drive-bys, or you'll see an 18-wheeler going down a residential street, knowing good and well it shouldn't be down the street, and you see a prostitute hop out. You know, you just never know, or you see someone urinating in the lot next door. You just never know. But the thing about it is, like, when you unpack the reasons why the community is the way that it is, and then you trace it back to redlining, you trace it back to the bombings in our community, you trace it back to a corrupt judicial system, police force, KKK, like, you see the past and you see how it influenced and created it. Oh man, it can make you drown in hopelessness. But it's those things, like I mentioned before, that I am just literally clinging to. Yeah.
Right. One of the things that you mentioned when you were talking about hope was Black women building their own tables. Mm-hmm. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what you wish people knew about how to let Black women lead.
This kind of gets me a little emotional. It gets me emotional because I think Black women aren't believed. Just flat out. Black women aren't believed. And it takes a tremendous amount of, you know, people advocating on the behalf of Black women. I remember speaking with a white male who was the executive director of a pretty big organization here. And I remember at the end of our talk, him telling me that if I ever needed him to vouch for me, that he would. And then he tells me that he can't even count the many times that a Black pastor or a Black leader has tried to go after a job or whatever, and the, you know, leadership would contact him to see if he's actually okay, to see if that Black person is good. And it wasn't, and it's not just your typical, oh, I'm just doing a reference check. No. Mm-hmm. he wouldn't get it from other white people, you know, other white applicants. He wouldn't get that, you know, them checking on them to see if they're really legit. And so I think historically Black women have been used, manipulated, used, abused. Black women have never had a voice. I highly recommend this book. It's called Killing the Black Body by Dorothy Roberts. And Medical Apartheid. Historically, Black women, and I'm going to kind of veer this into like maternal health. Black women never had ownership of their bodies. Their bodies were always sold, forced to carry a future slave. Black women were not really allowed to breastfeed their own children. So we did not even have control over feeding our own. Black women have been sterilized. So, I mean, it's just here in this country, Black women are not heard. And even to this day, Black women still are dying at disproportionate rates. And it's because we're not listened to. We're not believed. And so when we're talking about, you know, Black women leading, you know, I would say that it's one of the hardest things in the work that I do is I'm doing very necessary work in the area that I'm, you know, that I live in. There's nothing quite like what we're doing, and yet we're not fully funded, you know, and you start to wonder, like, what is it? So, I mean, I'm leading,
right?
You know, yeah. And I think also it's really difficult to even hear the word let.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, let Black women lead. I think
absolutely.
what really needs to happen is people just need to relinquish their power.
Absolutely.
You know, there's so much privilege. The truth is that privilege is everything. It is.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything. And so the more people recognize the privileges that they have and just relinquish it, you know, let it go. Like, that's not the world that the Lord created. Like, one person set above another, having wealth, those that are wealthy, having more, you know, that are, and I'm not talking about like tangible things. I'm talking about just the wealthy having more access to healthcare. You know, why is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, you know, those that are privileged, and when I say privileged, I'm talking about, you know, in this sense, wealth, you know, the privileged having access to the birth of their choice. Why is that? Every woman should be able to birth the way that they want to birth. Mm-hmm. You want to birth at home? You want to have a midwife? Why do you have to have $6,000 to do that? Why can't your insurance cover that? Why doesn't Medicaid cover that?
Right.
So it ends up forcing, you know, it forces people into certain systems.
Right. And I almost feel like, you know, during Black History Month, there were so many accounts that were, you know, giving quote unquote homework, like Google this person and Google that person. And I think what I found was Black women are leading. They always yeah. have been leading. It's just who you guys have decided are worth us being exposed to or reading about or knowing about.
Exactly.
Black women have been driving the bus in so many critical areas of science and health mm-hmm. and education and all of these areas that it is, like you said, just it is a sense of just acknowledging what's already happening and has happened for generations, and also just letting go of this vice grip hold on what people consider to be theirs.
Right.
Yeah. And I just want to say, I don't think this is an issue of leadership. It's an issue of followership. And
there we go.
And I'll just speak for the white women. It's who we are willing to put ourselves under in terms of following, and who we're willing to listen to, and who, like, if you're not willing to sit down and shut up and just listen and give away, like what Cecily is talking about, the power that you hold, the privilege that you have, if you're not willing to divest from white supremacy, then you're just going to be left behind, because there are ample opportunities to follow Black mm-hmm. women who are leading fantastically. And like, you, I mean, it's 2020. Like, you can do your own work. You can learn, like you said earlier, get on the Googles and figure it out.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not leadership. This is not a leadership issue. We don't have a lack of Black women leading. We have a lack of white women being willing to follow.
Yes. Thank you. I have a tendency to go roundabout in these.
No, you hit it.
And I'm so glad that you opened up the can of, like, I don't even know about that question. What do you mean, let Black people lead?
Yeah.
Let Black women lead.
Okay. Come again. Well, you know, this conversation drew me to the t-shirt that Abide has. And we sell this t-shirt on our website. There's three different types of t-shirts, one for Black women, one for midwives, and one for doulas. And what's interesting is this means a lot to us, because Mama Claudia Booker, she's a grand midwife. She passed away just a few weeks ago. Mm. And before she passed away, I reached out to her and asked her if I could use one of her quotes that I heard from her while I was sitting next to her a year ago. And her quote said, "We've been doing this for thousands of years." That's her quote. And what she was talking about is, she was talking about Black women. She was talking about Black women that have been birthing, Black women that have been catching. And so the back of the one for Black women says, "Black women been resisting, persisting, leading, educating, birthing, and healing. You may not know our history, but we ain't new to this."
Oh, come on.
Okay. And so that, you know, the subject is remember. I was like, oh my gosh, this is our t-shirt. Let me pull out my t-shirt real quick and read this.
Yes. But,
you know, this is a grand midwife who became a midwife in Layton age, you know, and she was the one. I sat next to her last year, and she was talking to just a group of women of color, Black women, women of color, just about how we have to resist this idea that we have to have white support, you know, white people holding our hands, or white people, like I was mentioning before, vouch for us for everything, that we just need to do. We can do the work. Yes. Now, will it help? Like, yeah, what needs to happen is exactly what you said, Lindsay. What needs to happen is people need to divest. People do need to relinquish power, you know? And so it's not about letting us do anything. You're right, because we have been doing it, but we have to be confident in it and to be unafraid, you know? Like what I was saying before, as far as our organization and how we're not fully funded, we're not fully funded. And it makes me angry, you know, because I'm like, come on now, y'all.
Yeah.
The world knows this, right. You know, organizations like this need to be funded, you know, but at the same time, I'm not drowning in hopelessness. I absolutely have hope that we're going to be just fine, you know, and it's not, go ahead, go ahead.
I just, you know, it just makes me angry too. Can I just say, just because I will say that in Texas, you know, we are quote unquote a pro-life state, and the work that you do It's pro-life. Adabine is, and I just, I can't, I don't understand. I just.
Well, that's the problem. That's the problem with, pro-life movements.
Right.
And racial justice. It's like they don't mix. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy. It's either humans have dignity or they don't. Which is it? It can't be sometimes. I don't.
Right.
I thought all lives mattered. What happened?
Where's that t-shirt? Right.
There's that blind spot.
So actually this leads kind of perfectly into a couple ways that we wanted to end this. First, tell me a little bit about one of the other things that I really, really appreciate about your presence online, besides just feeling like I'm learning a lot, is that you extend some grace for mistakes, but also you're very good about talking about self-care. And I'm thinking that in this time right now, self-care is important always. And in these hard times, it's gonna shift, and it's also gonna be as important, if not more. Can you talk a little bit about that in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So 2019 was probably the hardest year of my life. It was the hardest year of my life, but. So I went into 2020 with a new vision, and I said that in order for me to continue this work, I have to take care of myself. And I'm thankful that I with the organization that I run, we're part of the National Perinatal Task Force. And so we're surrounded by other women of color who believe in collective care and making sure that in order for us to continue this work, we have to take care of ourselves. When we look at our ancestors, mm-hmm. we look at the grand midwives and other people that worked so hard for us, and often to their demise, we have to realize that we have no choice but to care for ourselves. This work will literally kill us. And then for what? And so one, realizing that we are no one's savior and that we can't save the world. We can't. And then looking at things at the micro level, I think it's helpful instead of the macro. It's really, am I getting that right? Micro versus macro.
Yeah.
Small versus yeah. big. Okay. because it can be really difficult when you look at the big picture, like what you were talking about, Alyssa, just unpacking everything and it's just hitting you all at once. You can get drowning. You can just become drowned in despair,
Yeah.
And so, self-care is crucial. And it also can still be difficult. Just keep it real.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm a huge advocate for that. And setting self-care for me looks like setting boundaries. And so, since 2015, 2016, we've gone through a lot of the public execution of Black men and women. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot. It's been a lot to swallow, a lot to take in. And so, like I said before with the Google, we're done. So many of us are so done educating. And, I made this say it's 2020, we're accepting only change behavior. Okay, we've been educating you fool. So it's time to change the behavior. And we can change the behavior by who we vote for. We can change the behavior by how we how we spend our money. We can change mm-hmm. our behavior by what positions we hold. We can, it is absolutely wonderful when I hear of, I have a close friend, I consider her a mentor, and she's a woman of color. But when she's asked to speak, the first thing she asks is if they've asked a woman, like a Black woman, has a Black woman spoken? Have they reached out to a Black woman to see if they mm-hmm. would like to speak? And then she quickly gives them a list of Black women to choose from, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like relinquishing that power. Sorry, I go down rabbit trails and start veering off into different topics. But I strongly believe that self-care is so important. I'm real quick to set boundaries and to block people.
Yeah. Well, and I've never heard it. Like, I think just having the permission to say, like, I've never heard it said, you know, I can't do this critical work unless I'm like, able, like I'm okay, I'm taking care of myself, because then I cannot do this other work, and this other work is critical. It's mm-hmm. important. It saves lives, and so I have, it's not selfish. It's not self-seeking. It's not self-serving. It really is for the good of, you know, my family. It's for the good of my community. It's for the good of society if I do take some time for myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's an act of resistance.
Yeah. Yes,
it is an act of resistance. Follow the Nat Ministry. Follow the Nat Ministry on Instagram, please, everyone. Just do that. I don't have to say anything more about rest. I'm serious.
So one of the things I was really, really passionate about whenever I came to the group and said, you know, you asked me guys for my, like, this season, what's my number one person? Like, if I could interview anybody, this is who she is. And in that conversation, I was like, we have, you know, the listeners that are they're just wonderful people. I really want to give them the ability, if they have it, to support the ministry of Abide. So can you tell our listeners a little bit of various ways to support your work and the work of your team at Abide?
Absolutely. Lots of things have changed with Abide, or I'm sorry, just because of COVID-19, we've taken so many things virtual. But we really could use monthly donors, and you can donate by signing up on our website at abidewomen.org. You can follow us on Instagram at abide_women, and also on Twitter, and you can find us on Facebook. If you look up, GoFundMe, we have a GoFundMe account under Abide Women's Health Services as well. And on PayPal, but all of our links on our Facebook page, on our Instagram, and our website all lead to our PayPal account. And then, of course, we're always looking for additional board members. We are needing someone that's good with money. We need a new treasurer. Anyone that can help with our social media. We're definitely always looking for volunteers. And so you can sign up to be a volunteer on our website as well.
Awesome.
And Cecily, those are Dallas like volunteer opportunities, right?
Yeah, so Dallas.
Outside of Dallas, yes. Monthly support is the way to go.
Absolutely. We definitely, I mean, $5 a month still, like $5, $10, $50, $100, you know, we'll take it. No amount is too small. We are actually, up until now, 100%. Individual donor funded. I'm really proud of that. And so just if you want to give to a maternal justice organization whose values, I'm just going to list our values. We're life affirming or intrinsic human value, human flourishing, anti-racism, reparations, redemptive justice, racial conciliation, equity, inventive systems, and posture of heart. Those are all of our values, and they're listed more in-depthly on our website. But if any of those values like really pull on your heart, I highly recommend you pour into this amazing organization.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think, do you guys have like a Amazon list going on right now in the middle of this? Yes. Okay. So that's
goodness, my brain. Yes.
That's okay. We have well, an I link. Yeah. No, no, you're good. You're good. That's a lot.
Yes. We have an Amazon wish list. We also just put up a, and it's listed on our website as well. Okay. We just listed it's called COVID-19 Amazon wish list, which will really help with our immediate needs. Now we're doing like porch drop-offs for families who are not mobile, and that consists of just diapers, wipes, breastfeeding supplies, feminine care products. We have done probably 10 of those drop-offs just in the past week, and we anticipate several more in the coming weeks. And so yes, you can donate that way and just have it shipped straight to us. That would be a huge thing. And then we're also actually going to start adding more items to that list, because we don't have an exact date on when our Easy Access Clinic will open, but we need your support so that we can open. And an Easy Access Clinic is a clinic where women are birthing people are accepted with zero barriers. So we may ask for just a $10 donation, but essentially it's a free clinic, prenatal and postnatal clinic, run by a team of midwives. And that's one of the things that we're gearing up to open sooner rather than later. So, yeah.
So good.
Thank you so, so much. Lindsay, we're going to let you close us down for today.
Yeah, before I do that, Cecily, I don't know if you want people following your personal Instagram or not, but I just want to say if you...
Totally.
you like go in on your stories and speaking of like ways for people to follow Black women, this is like super easy entry level. Yes. Follow Cecily on Instagram and just observe the stories and you will learn a bunch of things. Like I can guarantee it. So Cecily, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Been really great to have you.
This is a gift. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks.
Needed that.
Yeah, we needed that. We both, Elisa and I, have been looking forward to this conversation. Really months, I think, at this point.
Yeah, we've been going back and forth. Yeah. Super excited.
Yeah.
You did not disappoint, I will tell you.
Oh, I really appreciate that. I really do. It was a lot of fun. And I just, thank you so much for having me on. And also, just to your followers, because I have two Instagram accounts, so I don't want people to get it all mixed up. It's the one that is my name, Cecily R. Smith. If you find yourself at another one and you have to ask to get to see my pictures, that's a no. Those are my kids.
yes,
that's good. The boundary. That's the boundary.
We like your boundary.
Awesome. Yes. So. Listeners, you can learn more at upsidedownpodcast.com or Upside Down Podcast on Instagram. You're always welcome to join the Upside Down Together listener group on Facebook, where we process through our episodes with the lens of God's Upside Down Kingdom. Thank you so much for being with us today, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Upside Down Podcast. New episodes are released on the second and fourth Tuesday of each month. The Upside Down Podcast is created by Lindsay Wallace, Kayla Craig, Elisa Molina, and Gina Siliberto. Our show notes are written by Lana Smith. Johnny Craig and Tess Malone edit the episodes, and our theme music is Dreamer's Act by DJ Sean P. And of course, our monthly patrons make everything possible.